Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. This is the Mail Report for April 2011. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about the sales of the top 300 comics through Diamond to retailers. Now, obviously, we're talking retailer sales, but we're going on the theory that retailers are ordering what they can actually sell so they don't, you know, go out of business or something. So, you know, this has a bearing on how these books are actually doing with readers. Now, Bob, this is another great month for Marvel. They had 49.8% of the total unit sales for the top 300, so 0.2% less than half, and just shy of 51% of the total dollars, with 50.99% of the total dollar sales for the top 300.
Yeah, a pretty good gap between them and DC this month.
Well, DC came in that second spot with 32.43% of the units and 30.61% of the dollars, so under a third. Of course, you got to figure everyone else is going to fight for some of the table crumbs, so that's eaten away at DC a little. But it's interesting because if you look at the history just from the Final Order era, which started back in that was March 2003. We've had almost 100 months since then. We've had 99, actually. Out of those, 95 times Marvel has come out on top in terms of the biggest share of the pie. Only 4 times has DC. So it's just so overwhelmingly common for Marvel to have the biggest share of the pie. If that's not kind of indicative of Marvel just having a bigger and or stronger fan base, I'm not sure what would be.
They definitely have that, you know, kind of a lock on the hearts and minds of people going to comic shops. You know, it's people love their Marvel comics. And they have for 40 years or more to, you know, to be fair. I mean, that Marvel has always had a good has done a good job of resonating with the comics fan base.
Well, that's too bad, because I heard if they angered the fans, they would do better.
Yeah, Tom Brieffer. They you know, but I mean they you know, in the 90s they kind of strayed a little bit, but in general, I mean, they know what they're doing. I mean, you know, I gripe about Marvel every now and again, or more than every now and again, but I don't think they're intrinsically clueless about anything. I think they know exactly the kind of stuff that sells, and they know how to reach into the wallets of their fans.
I think they know how to reach into the wallets of the fans. At times, I do frankly think they're a little clueless. I think some of what they're doing that's successful is just saturating the market. I mean, they had 104 items on the list, 6 were reorders, but still, that's 98 new items this month compared to the 72 for DC. So part of it is, if you just throw out a few dozen more things, you're going to do better.
Well, that's funny you say that, because, you know, in the latest thing that Brian Hibbs did, he was mentioning that, you know, Marvel wants to, if they want to pirate away market share, hey, they can crank out a couple of series and they'll sell 25,000 apiece, you know. You know, and if DC does that, they'll sell 15,000 apiece, and if Dark Horse does that, they'll sell 5,000 apiece. You know, so Marvel can just capture money much easier.
Well, it's funny
from the
though.
Wallets of the people who go to comic shops.
If you look at how the total units divided by the total items worked out this month, Marvel's average is 25,548 units, whereas DC's not that far behind at 23,705 units. So less than a 2,000 unit gap, closer to about 1,900 or wherever. So from that perspective, it doesn't seem like they're that far out of kilter. Now, granted, since the average price is higher at Marvel than at DC, it kind of works out a little differently on the dollar side. But Marvel is more prone to cranking out the more issues, trying to get the more dollars. What we've seen, though, and I did an article on this a couple of months back, is as Marvel has cranked up the number of titles or issues they're coming out with, their average sales have declined. So it's an easy way for them to get market share, but there is a cost to that, and I think a serious one. But, I mean, we've got a handful of other publishers, as usual, that are doing in that kind of 1 to 5% of the total unit sales. We got Image, IDW, Dark Horse, Dynamite, and Boom. After that, we get into kind of the back half of previews, and really only a handful of those even crack into the top 300, with Avatar, Bongo, Archie, Zenoscope, Cartoon Books, Aspen, Oni, Kenzer & Company, 12-Gauge, and Fantagraphics. And some of those with, you know, like a 0.06% of the total sales. So those guys are just playing essentially a different game at a different end of the field than Marvel and DC and stuff. So different rules apply. Now, if we look at the top 300 itself, as should be no surprise, top item is Fear Itself number one, and it did 128,595 estimated units.
The thing that really stood out for me was the huge gap between that and the number two item on the list,
which is Mighty Thor number one at 82,071 units. Now, this kind of gap is something we haven't seen in the last, we don't see much in the last year or two, but at one point a couple of years back, it was seeming like the number one item was often selling twice what the number two item was. And we're not quite at that level of disparity here, but even the gap between two and three, that third item being Green Lantern 65 at 75,780 units, I mean, there's a couple of thousand unit gap between that and Mighty Thor. And then another almost 5,500 unit gap between Green Lantern and the item at number four, which is Brightest Day 23 at 70,289. units. Now, from there down, we start getting a bit more contiguous in terms of the sales. But those first couple of items have, particularly like you said, that first and second, huge, huge gap between them. And a Marvel event topping the list, again, no surprise there. Particularly something like Fear Itself, which is going to bring in Thor fans, Captain America fans, Iron Man fans, and just general Marvel fans. So this is something that's going to kind of, you know, coalesce their fan base pretty well. It implies that perhaps the overlap of people reading those different, you know, franchises within Marvel, there may not be as much overlap as perhaps there is over on the DC side, where their events don't seem to accumulate quite as high of sales sometimes. I mean, I'm certainly not expecting Flashpoint to beat out Fear Itself. I don't see that happening.
If you had to guess, what would be your prediction on Flashpoint number one sales?
I'm going to go right around 100,000. I think it could be over or under by easily 10 or 15 from that. But gut feeling is when we look at these numbers next month, we're going to see Fear Itself number two high on the list. We're going to see Flashpoint up near the top in the rankings, but we're going to see a pretty big gap between it and Fear Itself. And then we're going to see the side stuff for Flashpoint, whatever comes out over the next couple of months, scattered way the heck down the list, with a few being up in the top 20, maybe even the top 10, and some being possibly below rank 100.
I'll be really interested to see how Flashpoint number one goes up against Fear Itself number two.
Now, how many variant covers did Flashpoint had? I think it had a few.
Flashpoint? Yeah, I don't know. I think I might have had two.
That's where it starts to skew the numbers itself. And you know, it's a Fear Itself, I think, is just going to have a larger base. But it's interesting because
I think it had some chase covers. I don't think it had covers that would cause people to be buying multiple copies. So
true, but anytime you've got incentive covers, variant covers, or alternate covers and stuff, they skew the numbers in different ways. And I think Flashpoint is more in need of that than Fear Itself. What's interesting is if you look down at rank 45, we've got Fear Itself Homefront number 1 coming in at 32,601 units. That's like a quarter of the sales of Fear Itself number 1.
I think that series was fighting against all the frontline minis that have been pretty forgettable that Marvel cranks out, you know, to go with each event that they come out with. This, at least to me, that one, that Homefront, felt like the frontline miniseries for Fear Itself.
Oh, totally. I think it definitely was. But what I take from this is, while people are not, I mean, there's always the, you know, event fatigue kind of question anytime we start seeing new events, particularly when we get one from both Marvel and DC simultaneously, which is fairly often. And I don't think it's so much event fatigue, because clearly Fear Itself did exceedingly well. But it's a matter of a, be it frustration, a lack of faith, a lack of enjoyment, whatever, of all of the side series attached to these events. Kind of the barnacles or whatever. And what we're seeing here with the Fear Itself Homefront, if we look even further down the list, Sin's Past, which I think was also some reprint material in there. But we're seeing people interested in the main event, but not, again, all those side things. And that's what I think is going to kill Flashpoint. Because the 16 one-shots, or 16 three-issue miniseries, the 4 one-shots, canceling Flash, Booster Gold essentially being the anchor monthly title, and so, it just doesn't make sense. I think that was really a highly questionable move by DC, and I mean, I hope it pans out. But I mean, you look down at rank 111. We got Booster Gold 43 at 16,018 estimated units. And that's down only about 75 units from the previous issue. So really, I think that title had kind of sort of stabilized, you know, around that level. It's going to shoot up probably quite a bit with Flashpoint. I mean, how could it not? But is really that the right title to be anchoring an event in terms of the ongoing titles? I mean, Flash itself is doing okay right around the 54,000 and either 953 for issue 10 or 54,633 for issue 11. But whereas Fear Itself, like I said, had the different franchises come kind of pulled together to bolster the sales, I don't think that's going to be the case for Flashpoint. It's going to be interesting to see where it lands, because really, I mean, it's anyone's guess. It's hard to predict the sales of a new title like that. And that's part of why I get really frustrated with the rotation of titles and the transient nature of sales. I mean, we look at ranks 4 and 6. We got the last two issues of Brightest Day. 23, like I said before, did 70,289 units. Number 24 did 69,742 units. That right there is a total of over 140,000 units. Now, if you go down to ranks 52 and 54, add in the 30,736 units of Justice League Generation Lost 23 and 30,643 units of Justice League Generation Lost 24, also the last two issues of that series, and you get to 410 units that DC had this month that they're not going to have in May. That works out to 11.6% of their total sales. So well over 11% of their total sales they're just not going to have. And that's just two titles that are ending. Now, after May, they're not going to have Flash for a couple of months. That's another, you know, 50, 55,000 units they're not going to have. I think a lot of why we're seeing sales that are as they're at, in terms of the aggregate for the publishers, is there are just so many issues of some comics coming out. We had 3 issues of Uncanny X-Men this month. 535, 536, and 534.1. They're digging deeper into the wallets on the existing titles, and I think they kind of have to because really we're not seeing successful launches of new titles these days.
Well, I mean, you just look near the top of the list and you just see the same sort of stuff, and it's people just buying multiple copies and multiple different titles all about the same top characters, and then you drop off really fast from there.
Well, I mean, look at FF number 2 in rank 5. It dropped over 42% from the first to the second issue. That's a pretty damn sharp drop. It's about twice the average. But we've also seen that kind of drop on a number of Hex titles over at Marvel lately. Now, does that mean people are sampling the first issue with no intention of getting it in the monthly format, maybe at all, or maybe they're going to get the collected edition, or maybe the retailers are overly optimistic on the first issue? I mean, there are many options as to what could be going on there. Bottom line, though, those first issue sales of the 121,000 plus were not sustainable. I think we're going to quickly find this title of FF sifting back down to around where Fantastic Four had been selling, just in time for them to do another, you know, marketing push of let's put it back to Fantastic Four in time for issue 600. You know, it's easy to get cynical about that. And I think, frankly, rightfully so. You know, we got two issues of Secret Avengers that not only came out in the same month, they came out on the same day with 12 and 12.1. 12 did 50,641 down at rank 27. And in rank 31, 12.1 did 46,161. And I'm not seeing any evidence that really supports these 0.1 issues bringing in new readers and bolstering sales. That could be happening. It doesn't seem to be compensating for the very common downward trend on most titles.
Well, again, if they were really bringing in new readers, you would see the numbers going up on titles. What they seem to be doing is the people, mostly the people who buy the regular title, buy the 0.1 issue, and some of them don't. Because they usually come in a little bit lower.
Yeah. I think it's just a bad idea on the face of it, because it's giving the impression that you need to wait for a special jumping on point. And I think that is so foolish, particularly when publishers are providing so many jumping off points.
I don't even think it's, at this point, I don't even think it's doing that. I just think it's giving people, I think people have pretty much accepted the fact that it's just a numbering device that Marvel uses to put out yet another issue of the comic in a given month. That's pretty much what it seems to be. It's like the number zero issues and stuff. It's just like, okay, here's another issue of Secret Avengers. I buy Secret Avengers, so I will buy Secret Avengers 12.1. Mostly. You know, 4,000 less people. You know.
Which in this case is close to what? Almost 10% of the...
Yep.
So you got 10% of the readership, in theory, saying, I'm not going to get every issue of Secret Avengers. That one doesn't count.
Yeah,
that seems counterproductive.
I'm in that 10%. I don't buy any of the 0.1. I can't say that unequivocally. I did buy Alpha Flight 0.1 because it's essentially like a zero issue or something. It's like, I know they numbered at 0.1, but I'm interested in reading the Alpha Flight series, so I got the 0.1. But in general, I haven't bought Secret Avengers, Captain America, you know.
Well, I think you've brought this up fairly successfully in the forum thread about how you're cutting back on your books, how these numbering and renaming shenanigans really kind of cuts off the completist mentality. I mean, you don't need to get a complete run of Captain America when it's about to get onto its, what, sixth or seventh volume? You know, those things just get ridiculous after a while. You know, add in the backdoor pilots they're doing on things like the Black Panther, you know, taking over Daredevil's title so he can get a four-issue miniseries with a new number one on that, and then a new number one after that with, you know, and the Mark Waid one, Daredevil series should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. But there's a this too shall pass aspect that all of this is reinforcing. And every time they do something that gives you a jumping off point or shows a short-term nature to the story that even the company publishing it isn't that invested in it, it raises the question that why should a reader be that invested in it? And I think that really hurts sales over the long haul. I mean, splitting the Thor title into Journey into Mystery and Mighty Thor. I mean, Journey into Mystery is down there at rank 34 with 43,925 units, which, you know, frankly, these days isn't too bad. But, you know, it's a little over half what Mighty Thor did. Now, granted, it's Loki versus Thor. I totally get why it's much lower. But did everybody going off of the Thor series really transition to either or both of these? Certainly the first issue of Mighty Thor did really well, but is that going to have a 40% drop or whatever when it goes to issue 2? Who knows? We'll find out next month. Or whenever the sales for Mighty Thor 2 come out. I don't know if it's actually shipped number 2 yet or not.
It's certainly interesting, because I don't know that there's... I'll ask you this question. How much of a correlation, and whenever we see a movie come out, you know, Marvel mostly, because they put out more movies than DC does, you know, they flood the market with all kinds of comics for that character. You know, we're seeing it for Thor. There's all kinds of Thor comics. There's all kinds of Captain America comics coming out. You know, one would assume that they're doing that to leverage the buzz around that and maybe offer these things up for people who don't normally buy comics. But, I mean, do we really see that happening? Because other than you have the Marvel logo, I mean, people know that it's a Marvel comic for the most part. But are they going to the stores and buying these comics? I don't see increases in sales that would indicate even a fractional percentage of people who saw the Thor movie have any interest whatsoever in buying a Thor comic book.
I don't think we see any translation of that at all. Now, it's one thing for somebody to say, hey, I got a little time to kill, I'll go catch a movie. That shows some interest, not a commitment. Whereas somebody who's going to actually go plunk down the $15-$20 bucks for the DVD or the Blu-ray, to me, shows somebody who would be an easier sell on the comic than somebody who just caught the movie. Would you agree with that?
I think that's fair to say.
So, it would stand to reason that if you were to take, say, the sales numbers of the Iron Man DVD back when it came out during the first, I think it was weekend or week, or the sales of the Iron Man 2 Blu-ray and DVD, you know, the first week of release, those would be people that would be, and obviously there would be overlap because they were at different times or whatever, but that the people who bought either or both of those would be potentially interested in maybe reading an Iron Man comic. Okay? What we're seeing, though, is it would have taken, because I did the math, because these things sold like 7,000 or 7 million units or whatever just in the first week of release each time, and I'd have to go double-check my math on that, but it was just huge. It would have taken half of 1% of the people who bought the movie on DVD or Blu-ray the first week of release to double the sales of Invincible Iron Man. And guess what? That hadn't happened. Now, we see some fluctuations in how something like Invincible Iron Man is selling and stuff, but I'm not seeing any correlation in time with how the title is doing versus when the movies come out. I mean, zero. I mean, when did the Iron Man 2 movie come out? That was around May of last year?
Something like that.
At which point we saw a bump on issue 25 where they were kind of repositioning things to get people in. And again, big 25th issue, that kind of thing. And then pretty much a steady decline in sales from there to around issue 33, bit of a bump when it renumbered to 500, and then kind of a little bit of a stabilization or whatever from 501 up. But nothing that had just an influx of people coming in from the movies. Now, part of it is, are they going to find a comic book store? Are they going to know which title to go get? Is it going to be similar enough to go, you know, leverage their interest or whatever? I think bookstores would be more where we might see that. And typically, whenever we see that kind of a correlation between increased interest due to a TV show or a movie and a comic book, you know, in print thing, typically it tends to be on a hardcover or trade paperback. And typically, when there is a very clear, I liked Watchmen, I'll pick up the Watchmen trade paperback. I like Walking Dead, I'll get Walking Dead in trade paperback. Or that kind of, you know, 300. Something where it's, I like Batman, but there's like 50,000 things. I like Captain America, but there's like 50,000 things. There's no clear target or recipient of that interest.
And that, I guess that's where I'm getting at, in a roundabout way, is, you know, if you get someone who's interested in Thor, and they see the Thor movie, they buy the Thor movie, or whatever. Let's go back to Iron Man. Someone's interested in Iron Man. There's a long, large leap of faith between even wanting to buy a Iron Man comic book singular to wanting to buy 20 different Iron Man comic books, you know? And but, as you say, it fractures it so much. I mean, if there was an Iron Man comic or two, you know, make two so that someone has a choice. But I think when there's so many, it's just overwhelming.
Well, and that's part of the problem. I mean, right now, if somebody were interested in Iron Man, do they get Iron Man or Iron Man 2.0? You know, and if they're interested in Thor, they're going to see the old Thor series, they're going to see Mighty Thor, they're going to see Astonishing Thor, they're going to see Journey into Mystery, which they probably wouldn't even notice as Thor-related. And with Captain America...
And then there's multiple mini-series, too, you know, of, you know, Thor Wolves of the North was a one-shot, and Thor, you know... I don't even remember all the titles, but there's like three or four miniseries kicking around, too.
Well, I mean, right now with Captain America, we've got the same thing with the Fighting Avenger one-shot, the Hail Hydra miniseries, which is doing under 10,000 units, all the one-shots they did, and that's something where it fractures the interest. I mean, Thor, Asgard's Avenger or whatever, did under 10,000, but I think that was more of a Marvel Universe handbook thing. They've splintered the interest and the recipient, and it's overwhelming. I think that, and this is something that I think is gonna kill Flashpoint, is kind of that decision paralysis. Too many decision points. And it would be wonderful if they could somehow get all the interest that's going on right now with the movies, because this summer is a great summer for comic book movies. I don't think we're going to see a resurgence in sales of comic books because of it. We could. It just would be unusual to see that. But pleasant surprise nonetheless if it happens. And again, aside from Fear Itself and Mighty Thor, both of which were high-profile first issues, Fear Itself also an event, next best-selling comic, the only ongoing you know, out of the top couple, is that Green Lantern 65, and it's, you know, 75,780 units, under 76,000 units. We have had periods in the past where we would have multiple titles over 100,000 at an almost sustainable level. In other words, not all one-shot events or first issues, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And really, besides that, Green Lantern, FF, which still is in the stabilization honeymoon period, doing under 70,000, the next ongoing that's got any kind of track record behind it's Avengers 12, 63,441 units. So the top of the list, not as high as it used to be. And there are a lot of people saying, oh, well, there's more increases in this area than that area, or, you know, this area is higher than it used to be, or the middle section or whatever, and they're losing sight of the... You can't really take a chunk of ranks in the middle of the list and say, well, this is a healthier section, just because different titles are kind of dropping through that every month. At the top of the list, though, you can pretty much say, you know, the top 10 ought to, in aggregate, be doing equally well or not as well, whatever. And, again, like you were mentioning, those huge disparities between the number 1 and number 2 sales and stuff, it's really troublesome.
Well, it's also the case this month that, you know, for many months, even though they're coming clearly in second place, that DC had, you know, had a pretty strong grasp on the top 10, and they lost that this month. You know, they don't have the, it's like, I think six of the top 10 are Marvel.
Well, and again, two of the ones that have been in or near the top 10 for the last year or so, with Brightest Day going away.
Yeah, so it looks like it'll be even bleaker next month for the top 10. I mean, Flashpoint will come in there.
Oh yeah, but there's easily 250,000 units that DC has lost after this month. Now, whether Flashpoint and other things can compensate for that, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But certainly they'll mitigate the damage. But they're having to constantly replace sales. And this is the whole transient nature of sales that just drives me nuts, is I think a lot of why we're seeing a downward trend on individual titles is because they don't last that long. Why getting that involved? Gee, I'm loving title X. It's just ending. Am I going to transition to the other one or not? Either way, that takes marketing effort and therefore money from Marvel and DC to try to transition me to that title. And, oh, Brightest Day. Yes, there's the Brightest Day Aftermath Search for Swamp Thing. Lasts all of three issues. Maybe they'll transition me to that. Maybe they won't. After the three issues, are they going to transition me successfully to a Swamp Thing series? Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. You know, but they're having to constantly resell me on stuff, and I'm not seeing huge success in that area by and large. I mean, if I would be more okay with that mentality if I thought people would stay on a given title from month to month to month. But really, these issue-to-issue drops we see on most titles indicate that that's not even true. I mean, if you can't keep somebody on title X from issue to issue, why do you think ending that title and trying to sell them on something else that's similar but different is going to work any better? Maybe it will. Sometimes it does. But often it doesn't. You know, and this month, we obviously had, aside from Fear Itself and Mighty Thor, no real high-profile number ones. The next highest number one after Thor is down at rank 40 with Herc number one, 38,774 units. Those are okay, but those are not brilliant sales, you know. And given how many things are coming out, you know, there were other things that, I don't know, it's showing that every time they launch titles, they're having a harder and harder time. Part of it's maybe they're greenlighting the wrong titles. I mean, do we really need that Scar King of the Savage Land, number one, down at rank 98 with just over 18,000 units? Don't really think so. Obviously, most of the audience doesn't feel interested in that.
Well, you know, I've been dropping a lot of books. I've been cutting a lot of books from my list.
Hey, I try to be clear in my communication. I don't mean to come down on you on the forum, but I do think there's a difference between cutting something you haven't been reading and dropping something you have. Because I think it's harder to drop. But yeah.
But my point is your list. I'm reducing the number of, you know, we can like argue over the word choice, but the point is I've been removing things from the list of stuff that I'm going to buy. And, you know, one person asked me, you know, hey, how many miniseries do you buy that aren't event related? You know, and like, well, the fact that I'm not buying that many event related ones either caused me to look back, and I'm really not getting that many. I mean, from the big two was the qualifier on that. And I'm not getting that many. And when I look back at my enjoyment of miniseries outside, you know, well, any miniseries from the big two, I mean, there have been a couple that I've enjoyed, but for the most part, you know, I think back, the Silver Surfer one was okay. I mean, the Hercules and Wolverine one, I mean, and I ended up dropping that one. The Captain America Hail Hydra, that was pretty weak, I thought. You know, just a lot of the ones that I have decided to buy. The only one I can say that I, in memory, that I really and thoroughly enjoyed was that Annihilator series, you know. And that one is almost like a exception to the rule, because that cosmic part of the Marvel Universe has really been a series that they've just called a whole bunch of different miniseries.
Yeah, it's been
a
series of miniseries, yeah.
But, you know, these ones that just come in from the sides, I really haven't been enjoying that much. So reducing my list by just not getting those things, that's pretty easy to do.
I just want to point out to the person who asked that question of, you know, are you getting these non-event miniseries, that maybe I misread your forum post, did seem to actually make you think about that Captain America core and take number two off your order.
It did. It absolutely
cause effect. I'm
did.
Just saying. Well, and I can't fault you for this, because a lot of these miniseries are, maybe they're interesting today, but they are completely forgotten a year from now. So they have no lasting impact either on the people reading them, certainly not on the creators writing comics, and therefore it's a kind of, why am I investing my time, money, and energy in that story when the people caretaking that narrative universe don't? And I can't fault that logic. You know, and frankly, a lot of these, like the Captain America Hail Hydra down at rank 154, 9,838 units. It's got another issue to go. It'll probably drop a little bit further on that. You're not missing much, and you're not missing in terms of talking potential. It's not like many people got it to begin with. 26,841. It dropped to 11,029 the next issue. I mean, that right there, bad sign. But there's too many of these transient miniseries that don't really have a chance to build an audience or to have any staying power.
Yeah. I mean, you've had a series of Hawkeye miniseries, and Blind Spot, it's okay. You know, it's selling. It's down at 139 at 11,702. Would I really miss it if I wasn't getting that one? I have a feeling that, you know, whatever's going on in that one's really probably not going to stick, or else it'll be referenced tangentially, you know,
outside of that. Well, the two that I find more interesting is the one right above that with Ruse number two in rank 138, and then down at rank 144, Sigil number two. These are obviously the second issues of the cross-gen kind of relaunch over at Marvel. Ruse did 11,861 units. Sigil did 10,887 units. Ruse was down 58.41%. Sigil down 61.79%. These both did right around 28,500-ish the first month. And now they've dropped pretty harsh.
Oh, it was interesting because there was another thread on the forum where I'm just going to call him Disney because he's got...
Yeah, the reverse Disney.
Reverse Disney and then Disney. Anyway, you know, he asked, you know, I noticed that Marvel's relaunch of the cross-gen came in with the number one issue hitting 28,520 for Ruse and 28,496 for Sigil. I was wondering where the original numbers were. I'm sure that these numbers beat the original series numbers. And I was thinking, so I actually went and I dug back through your numbers, and that actually wasn't the case because, you know, back when those originally came out, comics in general sold better. You know, from cross-gen, it turns out Sigil number one, and again, these were pre-orders back then, but, you know, Sigil number one sold 56,670. And, you know, I was just kind of looking at that, and Sigil made it all the way to issue number 20, and it was still selling 30,000 copies at issue number 20 in January of 2002. It wasn't until issue number 21 that it dropped below the point that Marvel launched the series at 27K, and now that the second issue has come in at a little over 10,000, I don't know that a cross-gen issue ever sold 10,000.
No, it died before they got below, I think, 18, maybe.
Yeah.
What was that first issue sales again?
Let me close that window. It was, where did I lose it at? There it is, 56,670.
That would have ranked at slot 17 this month. That would have beaten out Batman. That would have beaten out Flash and come just below Uncanny X-Men.
And at that time, it was June 2000, that 56,670 put it in 85th place.
Now, just to talk a little bit so listeners are clear on the difference between pre-orders and final orders. back in early 2003, Diamond changed the way they reported the sales figures. Prior to that, they did pre-order activity, which is basically what the retailer said, out of this previews, I want, here's how much. Okay, so it was initial orders, essentially, but what they pre-ordered. In 2003, starting in February, but fully kicking in on March, they went to final orders. So there's a two-month period, we got a little overlap, reported both ways. Because pre-orders are based on the previews, which is 2 months earlier than when the books actually come. Final orders, the numbers we're looking at now, are based on what was sent to and invoiced to stores during April. So we have stuff that is from, in the case of like Invincible, the October 2010 previews. A lot of this stuff is from the February 2011 previews, some from January, but it covers a bunch of different months. Now, before, everything in the pre-order stuff would have been from the same previews by definition. Now, what that means is back in the day when you had Rob Liefeld in particular, among others, saying, I'm going to do this series, and people would order it, and then it would never show, it could still top the list or come up, you know, pretty high. So that's how I was able to find that the Kevin Smith Spider-Man Black Cat Evil That Men Do series, where issues 4, 5, and 6 were egregiously late, that issues, I think, 4 and 5 dropped by like 40% from how they were initially ordered to how they actually sold 3 years later. But in the case of things that actually shipped, those pre-order numbers were reasonably accurate. It did not account for advance reorders, etc., whereas the numbers we're looking at now are what, again, actually retailers had to pay for in April. And that includes for stuff shipping at the beginning of the month that they could get either advance or actual reorders in during the month of April. Those numbers would be included here. That having been said, again, like you said, placing it rank 17 versus 80-something, just that's how different the sales are these days. We're seeing enough different things coming out. The bottom of the list is again, we've got so many more titles being pumped out. Lower-selling things have been pushed off the list. So whereas the list used to go down as low as, say, 600 units, this month the bottom of it's 2,767 units. So that gives the sense that the aggregate is doing better than it really... Not that it really is, but it's skewed because of that.
Well, it's also funny that, you know, you see the sales down. I mean, boy, it gets the bottom of the list, you know, you're around 2,700 units. You know, and certainly, you know, the bottom 50 are all below 5,000. You know, we go below 5,000 at rank 239. You know, so pretty much the bottom 60, 61 titles all sold less than 5,000. You see things that are touted as limited editions, you know, that have a limited edition that is 10,000. It's like, I remember back in the 90s, you had limited, you know, to 50,000 copies or something like that, or, you know, even, you know, go down limited to 10,000 numbered copies. And it's like just regular issues of, you know, really pretty good books. You know, you got Who Is Jake Ellis, you know, 4,087. That's a great series. I can see, though, why, you know, it's hard to find. I mean, that's very low orders, and just people aren't getting to see it. They're not getting to see how great that is. You know, you got Sixth Gun from Oni Press, you know, 3418. You got Fallen Angel from IDW, 3333. What else down? Orcstain. You know, a lot of people really love Orcstain. You know, great James Stokoe book, 2949 on here. You got Memoir from Image, 2844, Little Depressed Boy, 2808. You know, these are books that will genuinely be extremely hard to find, given that somebody's ever looking for them, because there are really not that many copies of them out there.
Yeah. Well, because literally this is the number of copies that stores bought. So it's whatever's on the rack. Maybe there was some reorder activity that'll
there's
go below.
There's maybe 10% more than that kicking around for, you know, reorders and
convention sales,
convention damages, whatever. But I mean, there's certainly not some big pile of, you know, 20,000 more copies of these books sitting around anywhere. I mean, this is what there is.
Well, I mean, what gets me with some of this is some of the things that you can use as comparative titles. I mean, those, you know, levels for the Ruse and Sigil right there are kind of setting the bar for where the cross-gen stuff's sitting at Marvel. You pointed out the Hawkeye blind spot right around that level. The one that I find funny is kind of smack dab between Ruse and Sigil is the Marvel backlist reading chronology. 11,078 units. More people were interested, or more copies of that were ordered than Sigil number 2. Significantly more than, say, that Captain America Hail Hydra number 4. You know, that's depressing. I mean,
Thunder Age. You know, even Thunder Agents. Thunder Agents, that is a great series. You know, by Nick Spencer, 9680.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a crime. But people aren't interested in it. You know, they're not. The stores aren't ordering it. People aren't buying it. It's not capturing
One of the other things that Brian Hibbs said is there was a point where he couldn't imagine not stocking at least X copies, I think he said 10, of every Marvel and DC book out there. And what he says is that there is like 5 or 10% of the output from Marvel and DC that he is getting for his pull list customers only. Zero copies are going on the rack. And in cases where nobody's pre-ordering it, no copies are entering his store.
And he's got a good-sized store.
And he knows how to be a retailer. He's been doing it 20, 25 years. I mean, the guy is smart. He knows how to run a business. He knows how to run a comic book retail business, which is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, which is why he's not buying stuff, even though, you know, people say, oh, you know, you want to support the industry, you want to be a full-service store, but, you know, the difference between making a profit and, what do you call it, the death by a thousand cuts of, like, losing money on an issue here and there every single month, it's the difference between staying in business for 22 years and going out of business.
Well, I think he's doing a better job supporting the industry by not buying things he can't sell.
Right, by staying in business.
Yep.
Because he goes out of business, and all those other comics that he does buy and sell, where do people go to get those?
Yeah, presumably about a mile over at Isotope or whatever, but I think that would be a mistake, personally.
Well, Isotope's a great shop, but I don't think Isotope is anywhere near as comprehensive a list of, you know... I mean, they have a lot of...
I have not set foot in either store, but what I know about the two guys owning them and the stores themselves, if I lived in that area, I suspect I would be shopping at Brian Hibbs' store, not Isotope.
Isotope is a very interesting store, but it's very focused on... You know, it's got a lot of trades, it's got a lot of indie stuff. It's a different vibe, and I can understand some people are going to like the one store and some people are going to like the other. I would agree, you know, for what you and I like in a comic store, Brian Hibbs is probably the preferable one. But that doesn't take anything away from Isotope, because Isotope's a great store. And, you know, it's got a vibe that's going to resonate with certain kinds of collectors and certain kinds of readers.
It seems
and those
to be
people
more for
love
the social aspect of comic collecting, which for me is not that something I'm looking for in a store. Yeah. So again, different tastes. But it's interesting seeing where some of these things are placing on the list. Non-player, rank 171. First issue did 8,869 units. That's really good for an Image comic coming out of the blue with a new property and stuff. We'll see how that second issue does when it ever comes out. Infinite Vacation number 2 is kind of interesting at 185. It did 7,786 units. That's up 3.77%, or about 283 copies from the previous issue. Seeing that kind of an uptick on a second issue, not common at all. And that's part of why I find the nearly 60% drop on those two cross-gen imprint books to be so, you know, disheartening is clearly not the case in Infinite Vacation or something that actually seems to be clicking better. Now, I had heard on the cross-gen stuff, I think it was, somebody had emailed me and said that their store had gotten extra copies, like an overship kind of a thing. I'm unclear if they had to pay for it. The impression I get is they did not. So I don't know that those would have shown up in the last month's numbers or whatever for this. But there are those kinds of things that can influence how much things are really seeming to trend. Turok Son of Stone, rank 182, did 8,015 units. That's a drop of over 36%. I believe Dark Horse has decided to discontinue that line of comics. The Turok, Magnus, and Dr. Solar. I'm not positive on that, though.
Yeah, I had heard that as well.
But if you're paying licensing fees and you're selling at this level, kind of hard to you know, break even and make money.
I had heard, and I think it was on Jim Shooter's blog or on something where they were quoting Jim, who's writing the books, is that you know, they were going to finish up enough copies to, like, you know, round, you know, be able to make some trades, and beyond that they were, you know, they were ending them.
Unfortunate, but makes sense. Now, this time around, in terms of the price breakdown, 44.33% of the items are an even 133. We're at that $299 price point, so it's still the main one. $399, though, is still kicking around pretty strong with 38.33% of the list, or 115 items at it. The only other price point to have a double-digit number of items on the list was $499 with 14 items. After that, $350 had 19 items on the list, too. But just between those four price points, you know, that accounts for over 93% of the list, almost 94%. So still seeing quite a bit of the $399 price point. DC, I think, is doing well at the $299 price point. There had been some discussion of, is that really working for them or not, because they're not doing so great in the market share. The thing about looking at the market share for measuring that kind of stuff is it's a pie that fluctuates in size. So I think that's an incorrect method of measuring it. Particularly this year, where we've seen some really low total aggregate units, particularly back in January and stuff. And I don't think that DC's goal in drawing the line at $299 was to actually increase sales so much as mitigate the loss in sales and to garner some goodwill. And in both cases, I think it's been successful in that regard.
Yeah, I think people have pointed out, as you say, I mean, hey, if I want to buy Avengers or I want to buy Thor, I'm going to buy Avengers or Thor, and it doesn't matter how much they're charging for it. Marvel has demonstrated that, you know, pretty well. I mean, they've got lots of top-selling books at the $399 price point, and just having a $399 price tag on a book does not seem to deter people from buying it in the least. And if they want that comic, they're going to buy that comic by that creative team, regardless of what the price point is on it. You know, someone's not going to say, oh, you know, New Avengers is $399, but, oh, you know, Flash is $299, so I'm going to go buy Flash. You know, it's like, well, if they wanted Flash, they'd buy Flash. If they want the Avengers, they're going to buy the Avengers.
And that's with that. And we talked about that when those titles first started going to $399. The tricky part, and it would require detailed point-of-sales information, is, you know, they may have been getting Avengers, New Avengers, and, you know, Flash, but because those other titles went up, maybe they can no longer afford Flash, so it drops off their list. That's the hidden repercussion that we really right. can't measure.
And but that's the thing where it's like, as long as Marvel comes out on top, you know, yeah. they're, you know, it's like they have stolen market share away from, or dollars anyway, away from DC. You know, but that's why, you know, like Batman, you know, it's like, I think DC, you know, that Batman, people love Batman, you know, it's like Batman books are always near the top of their list. They could do the same thing. They could charge $399 for Batman books, and people who want Batman books will buy them. I don't know that they would buy 8 Batman books. You know, they, you know, certainly, you know, the couple Batman books that, like, people would still buy it, but you have that intangible you know, which is, you know, they do have the goodwill, and you've pointed this out a number of times, you know, raising the price might lose some readers. Lowering the price will not conversely gain you readers.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, DC's got enough stuff out there that staying at $2.99, I think, was and they're doing it for the year, I think, is as far as they've committed to. So we may well see them bump the price back up in January, and I hope we don't. But frankly, they've got enough titles out there that if they were to lose even a few thousand units on each one, sure, they may make the dollars back by the price increase of the $3.99 versus $2.99. But I think they're smart not looking at it in terms of just the bottom line, in terms of number of dollars coming in, but in terms of how those dollars are coming in. And they're looking for better profits, if you will, and trying to get maybe less money from more people than more money from less people.
Yeah, I think I'm not basing this on any kind of knowledge, of any inside knowledge, but I would think that if DC wanted to get some extra money, what they would do is take some of their top-selling books that people are going to buy anyway, you know, like the Batman books, for instance, and do like they do with Flashpoint. You know, it's a $3.99 book, and it's got more than 20 pages, you know, and they just nudge these things up and say, okay, I'm going to take Batman, and I'm going to increase it to 28 pages of stuff, you know, maybe put an 8-page, but not tout it as a second feature, you know, but put 28 pages of content in it and make it $3.99. Now, you know, don't do it like with every single book, but do it with the top-selling books that people are going to buy anyway.
Well, I think while they could do that, I would rather they didn't. What I'd like to see is kind of going in the other direction. Go with that slimline format that worked well for Image for a while. Take stuff like a Blue Beetle or some of these other characters that can't sustain an ongoing. Do a 10-page mini comic or something with them at half the price. And do good stuff. Put talented people on it. And something to where instead of a 20-page $2.99 book a month, you get a 10-page every month at $1.50 or something. You know, that I think could actually, if it's written for that kind of installment, do pretty well. I mean, some are better than others at that. I think Nick Spencer with the Jimmy Olsen did great. Who did the Atom one? That was
Jeff Lemire.
Jeff Lemire did a great job on that. Some of the other backup features didn't have the momentum to carry me, but it's 10 pages. They could even maybe do it every 3 weeks or something like that, to where it's a lower investment, but, you know, slightly quicker release.
I don't know. I think in theory that would be good, but I just don't think that people who are going to buy Jimmy Olsen or the Atom or any of those kind of books, I don't think they're being deterred by the $2.99. I think that people who would buy that would buy it as a monthly book for $2.99 just as easily as they'd buy it for $1.50. I think if you made it $1.50, you wouldn't have a significantly larger number of people saying, oh, I want to try a Jimmy Olsen comic because it's $1.50.
I guess the question is, can they make the math work out such that they could have it at lower numbers and still be viable?
Right.
Could they do something like Rebels, change the format up, and get it to where they could keep producing it? Maybe they can, maybe they can't, but I'd like to see them experiment in that area. You know, I would rather see a $1.50 10-page thing of Rebels that I could buy just as that versus it get lumped in with two or three other things that I really don't care about, or as the backup feature in some other book. I mean, it showed that the backup feature really wasn't working all that well for them because they reverted away from it.
I agree that it would be nice. I just don't think that there are people out there interested. You know, this is,
and there may not be. I don't know. My point is, I think somebody would be not interested in Booster Gold, more likely to buy a $1.50 Blue Beetle 10-page thing than a $3.99 Booster Gold to get the same 10 pages of Blue Beetle, if they're not interested in Booster Gold. But
that's true. If you had this huge vein of people who are interested in Blue Beetle.
They had enough to keep them going for a while. They just couldn't keep it going. And maybe it wouldn't be a $1.50. Maybe it'd be a $2 or something. I don't know. My point is, they need to be looking at different price points and page counts, because the $2.99 or $3.99 for a 22-page story is resulting in some pretty low sales. And we're starting to see some key DC characters getting down towards that, you know, 20,000 unit sale, which used to be the kind of danger zone. I mean, Supergirl is in that area. We're seeing other, you know, Marvel titles in this area too. They even need to bolster sales by some manner, and I'm just trying to toss out ideas on how they can do that.
I'm just wondering, you know, and I don't disagree with you. I just think what they really need to do is increase baseline sales. You know, it's like, if you had a $1.50 book, would it sell 50,000 copies? Or would it sell, you know, 20,000 copies or 10,000 copies or whatever, which is about the same as they tend to sell of those books when they're $2.99.
At which point does the cost of the cover image and the marketing costs, et cetera, overwhelm it and make it not viable? You may be right on that. I don't know. I think it comes down to the fact that really, with three exceptions, everything this month was 70,000-ish or below. That's not good. You know, we dropped below 50,000 before we're out of the top 30. And the median sales this month were they were 10,305. The average was 17,785. Sales are not good. A lot of it comes down to individual titles are continuing to bleed readers and sales every month. And then they'll cancel title and restart it with a different name, different number, or a replacement title of something. They need to be working on long-term sales. They're doing short-term strategies, and they're not working. And they've been doing this for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, DC needs to work first on building their top property sales back up to the 200,000 level, right? And then they can worry about the minor properties, which are always going to sell some lesser percentage of what their top properties sell. But, you know, if their top properties are staying around 60, 70,000, you know, the minor ones, don't be surprised when they're selling 10 to 15.
If they could get Flash, Green Lantern, Batman, Superman, or Action, Wonder Woman, and a few, you know, key properties, and sustain them in that 90 to 100,000 level, even if that doesn't always put them in the top 10, although frankly it almost always would, that right there with just a handful of really solid, strong sellers would be a game changer. That would really put Marvel on less solid footing on getting that lion's share of the market every month. And I think that would build over time. People would say, oh, DC's selling better, it's looking better. They'd be more interested. More people would be reading it. They'd be talking about it more. It's a question of, can they sustain it? For a while, Marvel was able to do that with the Avenger properties. Those are now selling in the low 60,000s. So it's, you got to build it up to there, and you got to keep it there. I think the first step for that is keeping it wherever it's at and then building on top of that. But easier said than done.
This is true.
So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by John Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes to two decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why, or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales through competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond Comics' distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.